This is Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. Every weekday, we talk with public officials, business and education leaders, nonprofit organizations, and more about the issues of the day as we work hard to help you stay connected with local news and information. Now, here's Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Thanks for listening. We cover a lot of different things around the Umpqua Valley. Oregon State Legislature, a short session is coming up soon. We're going to get to that in a moment with State Senator David Brock Smith. David, thanks for being on this afternoon.
Thank you, Kyle. Good morning. Good afternoon.
Yeah. So before we jump into that, though, I mean, this developed about an hour and a half ago, that Chris Dudley running for governor again. A lot of people thought that might happen. What was your take on it?
Well, I've been hearing for probably 3 to 4 weeks that he was going to announce next week. So it was always the next week. Of course, Chris Dudley ran in 2010, got, I think, within less than 2% of the vote between that race. I hope that that they continue and that there isn't too much of being up during the primary that can be used to be hurtful during the general against Governor Kotek. We had, I think, 18 Republicans running for governor in 2022. And so I think that there will probably be more before the filing deadline on March 10th. I have, of course, always supported Christine Drazen. Of course, we all have our opportunities to support our candidates, and Christine I've worked with and I believe that she is best suited to once get past the primary to organize and rally Republicans and non-affiliated voters and some Democrats to get the change that we need in Oregon.
Now, we're up to 18 candidates for governor right now, 13 in the GOP alone. Of course, Ed Diehl entering the race last week as well. With this many people in and maybe more to come, politically speaking, though, doesn't this kind of dilute the potential for anybody coming out of the primary with much momentum? Not only that, they've got to spend a lot of money in the primary to get through that, and then they've got to deal with the general.
I don't disagree. I mean, it's with your synopsis there, they are going to spend resources that are finite to fund GOP campaigns and in the state. And there will be a significant amount of resources spent between now and our May primary election. Representative Diehl is a good friend and colleague as well. He has done a fantastic job as someone who was part of the team in moving forward through the Oregon Freedom Coalition, getting the signatures and setting that up statewide for the referendum that the Governor Kotek, of course, wanted to repeal, and then they got the 1935 Attorney General opinion saying that you cannot repeal a referral. And that referral says that it's going to be on the November ballot. And that November ballot is also already in the Secretary of State's ballot title that has been approved. So to have the governor pivot for redirect, which was the Republicans' proposal for the existing resources within the ODOT's budget now, and then attempt to pass legislation to move the referral that collected over 250,000 signatures from Oregonians when we only needed 78,000 to the May ballot is really disheartening. And we are going to do everything we can to make sure that that doesn't happen.
Yeah, let's jump into that. I'm going to come back to the governor's race in a while, though. But yeah, Democrats want to move it to the May election. One of their takes on releases they put out is it would get the matter of the funding and the whole question settled sooner, which could be helpful. What do you think about that?
I think that's one of the most ridiculous arguments. And they're reaching pretty far for that one, Kyle. We're in a situation where over 96% of Oregonians was opposed in testimony to the bill. We made history with non-affiliated Republicans and Democrats signing the referral. The polling that we have all seen shows that over 60% of Oregonians are opposed to Governor Kotek and her Democrat supermajority's gas hikes. So we know what the outcome of the election is going to be. And so the idea that we need to get the opinion of the voters in May so that we can start forward in figuring out what we're going to do with transportation is ridiculous. We should be doing that now. In fact, our leader Starr and the Republicans were there in good faith to move forward a transportation package, and the governor refused to do so in the long session in 25. Instead, she forced her rank and file Democrats to come to her aid and pass this transportation package in the special session in September. We know what Oregonians think. And so the idea that they want to move it to May, which has historically lower voter turnouts, so that they can possibly squeak through a win on this is ridiculous. The November election is where it should be, and the governor and the Democrat supermajority should be moving forward knowing that the Oregonians are going to vote it down and support the measure.
Do you feel like this issue is going to end up dominating the upcoming short session?
It's going to be a huge factor with the upcoming short session, but so is the disconnect that the Democrats want to do, right? So you have essentially with H.R. 1, that is one of the largest, if not the largest, tax cut to working families in the country. The state tax code just connects with the federal tax code. We know that in doing so, because of these cuts in taxes for working families, that if we continue to stay with the federal tax code, we will have a reduction of roughly $888 million in taxes coming into Oregon from Oregonians. And that is money that should be in the individual's pockets, Oregonians' pockets. And the Democrats want to take that away. Within that legislation, there's no tax on tips up to $25,000. There's no tax on overtime up to $25,000. There's no, you'll be able to write off the interest on your car loan amongst, small business depreciation incentives and tax credits. That, of course, are meant to drive business in our economies. And the Democrat supermajority wants to carve out those. And so not only would it take money out of Oregonians' pockets, but it will also cost those tax preparers and accountants additional frustration in doing the taxes because those tax cuts for feds would not be eligible for Oregonians. So we're going to get a Senate Republican caucus briefing on the framework of what they're talking about tonight in a caucus meeting. So I'll have a better idea on the lay of the land come tomorrow. But as a member of the Ways and Means Committee and a member of the Ways and Means Subcommittee on Public Safety, for me, we've been doing exercises in the legislature with regards to 1 to 2 to 5% cuts in budgets. We need to lean the budgets, as always, to best spend our taxpayer dollars in every department But I am not interested in cutting any resources out of public safety or education, especially, Kyle, since we spend over $700 million of Oregon taxpayer dollars in funding health care for those that are in Oregon illegally.
All right, we're going to take a break. More when we come back. State Senator David Brock Smith, the program and interview, a podcast after 1 at 541radio.com, 1245, and News Radio, 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. Inside Douglas County, 1247, Lars Larson at 1, State Senator David Brock Smith on Inside Douglas County, getting ready for the short session of the legislature. What about legislation that you're going to put out there? I know there's a real tight limitation on the number of bills that you can introduce in the short session.
There is, but there's no limit on amendments for other people's bills, Kyle. So we're already looking at teeing up an amendment for a piece of legislation to help save the services in Probe Area Hospital in Coos Bay. I have two pieces of legislation. One is a salmon credits piece of legislation I've been working on for a couple of sessions that would unfortunately be narrowed just for the Coquille and Coos Rivers at the moment, but essentially will help grow some on-end habitat by having developers invest in purchasing these salmon credits with willing landowners that will have property that is marginalized land near some on-end habitat watersheds. Those dollars would then be invested. Half of them would go into a long-term investment account where the property owner would get a dividend in perpetuity. So they'd be not only growing hay, but growing salmon. And then the other half would go towards doing the restoration work to bring the salmon, some on-end habitat uplift for that watershed. It's beneficial for the developer because they get mitigation and surety because we'll have these salmon credit conservation easement lands in the queue and ready to go. The other piece of legislation is something that I tried to get done because you remember I helped lead the effort in repealing and reforming Measure 110 back in the 24th session. There is what's called the Oregon Accountability Commission, which is frankly a joke, that manages the cannabis tax dollars. Everyone asks, well, where do these cannabis tax dollars go? Well, they go to treatment for drug users and the disease associated with it. As we know, a lot of our homelessness is associated with drug use as well. These resources go to this AOC commission and are divvied out. And like I said, it's a joke. It's now managed under OHA, which is frankly an abyss of an department in the state. And so my legislation would direct those dollars to the Behavioral Health and Deflection Commission, located within the Criminal Justice Commission, which is a fantastic organization made up of local elected officials and business leaders and so forth. Commissioner Freeman is a member of the CJC. And so those dollars would then pass through there and then go to the counties. The counties would then create the MOUs and contracts with the service providers. Most counties already have, of course, public and mental health programs. That way, and they know what service providers would be able to contract with and have those measured deliverables and accountability to the citizens. You might remember an Oregonian article from a few months back where the service providers in Multnomah County spent $3.2 million to treat one person. And that's the kind of waste, fraud, and abuse that we can't deal with any longer. And bringing it back to local control and creating those MOUs and contracts will bring the services that we need for our residents in our local communities.
So for members of the legislature, you get into, we're coming up on the elections here. Midterms usually tend to favor the party out of power nationally, at least. How do you feel like the GOP can make inroads in Oregon?
Well, I think we have a better message, right, Kyle? I mean, if you look at Oregon has slipped to 39th in business friendliness. We're 47th in education. Now, that's a tick up, you know, from 48th. But we also did lessen the graduation requirements, if you remember, as a state. I think that Oregonians are frustrated that they're, you know, you see $1.99 fuel prices across the nation, but yet we're still over $3 a gallon in Oregon, ticking up again. You see various policies that don't allow for development that we need for to grow our economies. There's just too much bureaucratic red tape. I mean, and if you look at just the failure of Governor Kotek and the Democrat supermajority with the transportation package and the overwhelming pushback by Oregonians from across the political spectrums, we have a fantastic opportunity. We have great candidates that are running in various positions, both throughout the state, both in the House and the Senate. And I think the messaging is there. There is polling that we see every day that, you know, over 70% of Oregonians, you know, want us to deal with criminal illegals in this state. But yet the narrative nationally is, you know, moving, you know, to defund ICE and so forth. It's very frustrating to watch our federal delegations, you know, jumping on these bandwagons when under the Obama administration, there was over 3 million illegal aliens that were deported. Director Holman got an award from the President Obama at the time. Nothing is different other than the sanctuary policies of states and cities. Because normally you have a situation where if a criminal is arrested, right, then if they're here illegally, they are notified. They notify Immigration and Customs Enforcement and Border Patrol. And then those individuals are picked up and deported. What happens now is you could have these individuals that commit crimes and break the law, then they're released back into the communities, and then it takes Immigration and Customs Enforcement officers to then scour through the records to get the information, and then they go find them. That's one of the reasons why, I mean, there's thousands more deported out of Texas and Florida, for example, and these points of entry of the United States. But you never hear anything about it because you have local law enforcement that is working with the Immigration and Customs Enforcement. And so it's just rather unfortunate that these policies and the incitement by our Democrat delegation is putting people in harm's way, really. It's tragic.
A couple minutes left. Getting back to the session, what kinds of things do you do to get ready for this short session?
Well, we you know, we got the lay of the lands of the bills today, really. So we kind of know we're going to be having a caucus meeting and going over the good, the bad, and the ugly, so to speak. The short session is literally the 6 months long shoved in that 35 days. We have roughly a week and a half to get a bill, first read, get a public hearing, and then get a work session, and then get it out. And so the main issues that we talked about a little earlier is dealing with the fact that they want to decouple and reduce the $888 million in the proposed budget shortfall. We're going to get another revenue forecast mid-February during the session to kind of figure out where we are and where we expect to go. So that number will decrease or increase depending on the outlook economically for the state. But what we really do is we're just trying to get the lay of the land to stop the bad bills from moving forward, and it's. We don't have very many tools to do that in the super minority, but try to coalesce around and support good legislation that would help cut through red tape and help working families and grow our economies.
And for people not looking at the calendar, February begins on Sunday, and your short session starts Monday. Is that right?
Monday, February 2nd is when we start, yeah.
So 1 week from today. All right, State Senator David Brock Smith will connect again as we get this session going. Thanks for being on today.
Thank you, Kyle. Have a blessed rest of your day.
1257 at News Radio, 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Listening to Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN, a daily look at the people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. It's presented by Concrete Builder Supply. The show will be available as a podcast in just a few minutes at 541radio.com. So share it around and let others who weren't listening live know about today's show. Inside Douglas County is a public affairs presentation of Brook Communications. Stay connected with local news and information. News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.